panoply, panorama, panpipe, pansy, aha, pansexual, knowing no boundaries of sex or gender. Sound interesting? Then join Sally on Sundays at noon for Out of the Pan. All those gender questions making you think too hard? Whether it's transgender, bisexual, polyamorous or beyond, we'll throw those questions into the pan and cook up the answers for you. So go on, push that gender envelope, only on 3CR 855am digital and 3cr.org.au.
CR 855 AM, 3CR digital, 3CR.org.au, 3CR on demand, Out of the Pan with Sally. First broadcasting noon through one every Sunday afternoon. Thanks for your company. 3CR broadcasts from the lands of the Kulin Nations at the overlap of the Wurundjeri and Bunurong peoples, and we pay respects to elders past, present, and emerging. Hello to any Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander First Nations people tuning in for the today from whichever lands you are on. Always was, always will be Aboriginal land. I'm Sally Goldner. I use the pronouns she and her. There's lots of ways to get in touch with this program by relatively modern means of communication. And you can email outofthepan855@gmail.com. You can also SMS 61456 751215. On Twitter, Mastodon, Blue Sky, and Instagram at Sal Gold Said So, and that's the bottom line. And posts on Facebook, my page Sally Goldner and Out of the Pan 3CR 855 AM Melbourne. Any opinions I express on the show are strictly my own. You can also post things to 3CR. We are communications diverse. PO Box 1277 Collingwood 3066. Don't see any content notes coming up today, so I won't give the numbers just there. And we opened up with Men at Work with Greg Hamm on lead vocals for that one, and no Giving Up. Last week I wasn't in and replayed an interview from December last year with Dennis Altman, and I did notice a couple of messages coming later on and wanted to respond to our fabulous correspondent, roving reporter. I couldn't ask about, obviously couldn't put those to Dennis Altman at the time, whether Dennis feels safe going out as a Jew in Melbourne, even as a secular Jew, and does he get backlash from his own community? Well, I can't answer those questions directly, but yeah, unfortunately, based on what I've heard from Jewish people in the queer community, and there's actually an article in a Jewish media outlet this week on this, that many queer people are feeling isolated from their Jewish community and vice versa in the last 2.5 years. And, you know, sometimes I've felt the same way myself. Also had a couple of cards in from the fabulous Wombat. One of our awesome listeners. Remember, 3CR only has awesome listeners, not regular ones. He loved the version of Physical from a few weeks ago. Said we need more of Sally singing on Out of the Pan. Okay, well, you asked for it. The listeners are here. And also, in relation to the show on the 22nd of February, yeah, the number of intersex people is by mathematical coincidence the same number of the percentage of the population with naturally red hair. And, apparently the same as the total population of Tasmania. So there we go. Statistics. And I'll get the wrestling reference out of the way at around 8 minutes past. There's some Steiner math for you. Anyway. Enough of that. I've got a packed show today. Two guests will be joining me live in the studio at 12:30. Jesse Ryan, who's become, an awesome guest because we don't have regular guests, will be talking about their latest comedy show, All Guts, No Glory. But joining me right now live in the studio to talk about her Melbourne International Comedy Festival show is Justine Sless. Justine, well, you're no stranger to the microphone and 3CR. Welcome back.
Thanks, Ali. Great to be here. Thank you.
Thank you. And, well, dare I say bravo, because that is the name of your show. First one in a while, so there's a couple of things in there. I suppose first up, why did you take a break from the comedy festival in particular, would be the first question, and what brought you back might be a good place to start.
Great. Thanks. So I'd done a festival for many years, and the last show I did was back in 2015, and I set this ridiculous standard for myself. If I didn't get nominated for an award, I was out. And so I took that to the extreme, and I was out. But what I did in the last 10 years was I did a master's by research in creative writing on gender and comedy.
Wow.
And I wrote a couple of books, and my third book is coming out. So coming back to writing a show has been really, really refreshing, because I trust the process. And I've come back to it because a proposition came up in my life. A bra appeared in a bedroom, the ownership of which was a mystery. And it was too good an opportunity to not pop that in a new show.
I think if a comedian can't find some comedy gold in that, then, well, with all due respect, retire. And, of course, that the same rule would apply regardless of sex characteristics or gender. So there you go. You're back in there. And I mean, this might sound an obvious question, but learning about creative writing after having or doing the masters in creative writing and gender, after doing comedy for so long, what sort of things sort of came through in that, where, you know, that sort of light bulb moments came out of that? Yeah. Because that's interesting as well.
So my master's by research in creative writing looked at humour as a power construct in the wider gender-based violence lens. Mm. So essentially it answered the question that had puzzled me from the moment I stepped into a comedy room,
yeah,
which is generally where people learn stand-up. And the question was, where does all the hostility come from towards me? Why do I feel such a sense of hostility? Why do I feel that this is an unregulated, not feel, this is an unregulated environment? It's complex. There's a lot to navigate, aligned with the navigation of actually doing stand-up comedy. And it really bugged me. So I did stand-up for 10 years or so. Mm-hmm. I did lots of shows, and I teach stand-up all the time.
Yeah.
I teach stand-up a lot in schools, workplace, rooming houses, libraries, because comedy is so rarely taught in formal settings. I think it's important to kind of deconstruct the art form, teach it in a simple, palatable way outside of the comedy room area. So the light bulb moment for me during the research was that comedy has historically been a masculinized art mm-hmm. form. The language of comedy is the comedy itself is an aggressive, take charge art form. The language is aggressive. We die, we bomb, we kill. And that wasn't my understanding of what – that wasn't my intention with comedy.
Mm.
So when women or people who are not white cis men enter comedy, mm-hmm. they must navigate the male topography that is stand-up comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And generally for women when they enter stand-up comedy, not so much now, they must self-deprecate in order to apologise for existing within that space.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's, you know, right to the point there. I mean, I am taking some deep, in one sense, taking some deep breaths and then, you know, sort of going, yeah, misuse of masculine power, to put it politely, and I could use various phrases ranging through outright to toxic masculinity / misogynism.
Mm-hmm.
And then you sort of think, yeah, I'll just say there's things on my mind at the moment in relation to that, in relation to things that I do, have done.
Mm.
And then my mind started going, yeah, where are the areas where it doesn't happen? Not really finding too many. So I think this is really good, though, that you've looked at your particular passionate, knowledgeable area like stand-up in this creative writing process. I think that's naturally massively valuable to society. And, of course, for 3CR as a feminist station, woohoo!
Woohoo! So it sort of it culminated, the Masters was completed, it got adapted into a book, The Mistress of Mirth's Comedy Tour, and comedy is an acronym in this tour where I take people on a tour into the landscape of live stand-up comedy in Melbourne, and comedy is an acronym for Call Out Male Entitlement Daily Yawn.
Oh, love it. Oh, that's just giving me a boost along with the coffee. I might not need the rest of mine. No, I will drink it. Don't waste coffee.
So linking that with gender-based violence, the actual landscape of live stand-up venues is prohibitive for many people. Many people aren't paid. Shows go on all night, you know, till 11 at night. So getting home from those places is problematic. With all due respect, one of the chapters is called Eurydice, Why Justice? And with all due respect to Eurydice Dixon's family, the chapter looks at the events that followed the awful atrocity, the murder and rape of Eurydice Dixon, and it really called to question what it is to be a stand-up comedian and getting home at late at night and how that happens. Since then, when I talk about why justice, it's globally things changed as a result. Comedy Festival has a platform called Light the Way Home, which supports people getting home late night from gigs. So in the context of gender-based violence, it really is about comedy gives people a platform. They're seen, they're heard, and they can undermine systems and structures that seek to oppress. So when you link that with the masculinized topography, it is another way of silencing women, because humor is their power construct.
Yeah, look, definitely so, and I'm thinking of a couple of other areas where this has come up, but before I go any further, if anything was distressing, and I think it needed to be said directly and clearly, please call Lifeline on 13114 or for queer-friendly services, QLife, around so-called Australia, 1800 184 527. And also and the Gender Violence Helpline, 1800 737 732. And I am going to just throw something else in. I have a new tag team partner in the studio, Erin, who just gave me that number. So we're already teaming along. And this is very welcome to Erin, who's going to make Out of the Pan, hopefully go another 21 years. But, look, coming back to your point, to get those, clear my head and get those out of the way, it needs to be discussed. And I suppose I'm going to clear my head a little. It's many years ago, 2014, there was a very interesting sex positive and kink event that got together, and many of us were discussing similar themes about how the events are on late at night, you know, starting at, God forbid, 11 o'clock, which doesn't work for people, say, with mental health issues or medications, and then you've got to get home and we can't afford taxis, and I don't think Ubers were in around as much back then, but whatever, Uber, Sheba, whatever else. So I like the idea of
Light the Way Home.
Light the Way Home is a very, very good idea of which we need more, so things can be more accessible, both on a gendered basis, but also for those with less income, privilege of all forms. Really, really awesome stuff. And, you know, I think there's certainly a need. You know, this is really good. So, I mean, it's really good that you're doing this, you know, sort of research and having these thoughts and getting them out there. I should ask, your master's, is that publicly accessible?
Yeah. So it was adapted into the book, The Mistress of Mirth's Comedy Tour. And, you know, I teach comedy all the time. My current gig is with Skitsy Inc. And I'm teaching the Rad Cactus crew this afternoon, actually, up at Grouse Bar. And that will culminate in a Melbourne Comedy Festival show. You know, Skits Inc. is an extraordinary organisation headed up by Heidi Everett.
Indeed.
Who, you know, creates incredible artistic opportunities for people. And teaching stand-up in the middle of the day, in the middle of the city, it is a whole, with a performance outcome, is a different way to navigate and remain in stand-up.
Yeah. A couple of things have come to mind, you know, in terms of staying in stand-up, but we've discussed some of the barriers. In terms of getting into it, leaving aside the barriers of discrimination and similar and privilege and those sorts of things, in terms of the comedy itself, you know, as someone teaching creative writing, what do you think, you know, is there anything in your experience that stops people writing the comedy in the first place when you teach? You know, people come to the class, they kind of want to do it, but, oh, like, I can't think of anything to write. What do I write about? How do I write? Those sorts of things, without, you know, giving away your trade secrets or anything, can you throw a couple of, I'll say, teasers at us as to what stops people writing, all that sort of thing?
It's the idea. So I will always offer comedy writing prompts. So for a simple set-up joke, I'll use the prompt, "My cat had never done that before." And you can use it as a set-up or as a punchline. And so often what I'll do with participants in the workshop is I'll just say, just talk to me. Just talk to me about this idea, because comedy is usually a twitch. You're kind of like, hey, there's a thing there. I like mm-hmm. that there's a thing. And so you kind of chalk it out. And I'll usually make notes and then I'll go, I think there's something in that, or they will just be up at the mic riffing and then it will consolidate into material. And often it's about the positioning of material. The punchline might in fact be the setup. The story might need to veer off somewhere and come back to make it funny. But I give very clear comedy writing techniques, very, very clear, very accessible and very doable. And by the end of a 60-minute workshop, I can get people match fit to do stand-up comedy.
I'm going to say this and be darned with it. I need to come to one of your workshops because okay. I think I've got plenty of stuff to write about, but it's sort of where to start. Do I feel overwhelmed? That sort of thing. And you, I mean, you've given me one hint. Part of me doesn't really like writing. Maybe I just need to talk into a MP3 player or AI or whatever and, you know, transcribe, which would probably help me as well. So, I mean, you've already given me a lift as well in just during this show, but we'll do coffee after the festival when your head's clear, Justine, because I this is really, really awesome. So, you know, you're doing a comedy show, which ultimately comedy we'd like to think makes people laugh and gives people some relief from that weird world out there. But you're also doing something, you're building capacity in a sense with this show, which I really like.
I guess, you know, part of the thing about why am I doing a show as well is also from a kind of professional point of view. I teach comedy all the time. I haven't done a solo for 10 years. And coming at the process of writing a show with a finite, requirement, do the show, is very good practice for me professionally. And the building capacity, I can demonstrate to my students, this is how you do it. I'm very big on process. I love the process of writing a show, of, you know, putting it all together. I've forgotten what the question was.
Well, it's sort of like we're sort of building capacity here by doing the show, but also, well, it's building your capacity. And a couple of things came to mind. I've been going to the same person to get my eyebrows, or same place to get my eyebrows done for 25 years, and the boss who started there is now, you know, built the business, but she still does a few sessions every week to keep in touch. And similarly, one of my friends who's a CEO and started out life as a psychologist will still have a few clients, because you can sit there and teach it or be the boss of it, but you've got to sort of keep a little bit of hands-on to keep up with it. And I think that's a very sensible thing to do. So I see comedy in that sense as the same thing, you know. Otherwise, you get out of touch.
With this show is called Bravo. It's on from the 25th of March to the 3rd of April. The MC showroom in Paran, there are two flights of stairs. I'm sorry. And I set up three different propositions as a kind of intellectual exercise to see if I could pull it together. So the three propositions are how we deal with a plethora of opinions and how we process that. I've forgotten the other one. How we deal with opinions and how we manage my mind just totally went blank. Basically, the point of the show is I found a bra in a bedroom, the mystery of which it had to be resolved. It's linked with opinions and it's linked with dealing with everything, with more weather, more stuff, more opinions. And so I had to draw that bow together beautifully, a little package, and go, here's some theoretical frameworks. That's the other thing. I love theoretical frameworks. So I had to I love the intellectual exercise of that and putting that together and making it work and making it look seamless. And having taught comedy for so long, I'm glad to say I practice what I preach.
That's a cool thing. Look, I have to say that I've just been so fascinated by all of this. Maybe I went off track thinking about how you teach things. So I just want to check in. Is there what else do you want to add about the show and where it's on, which you've done a bit of? And thank you, because you probably brought me back on track. I've just found this so fascinating for our listeners, and yes, for myself, that I just want to check that we've got everything that you wanted to say about the show covered.
Sure. 28th, 29th of March and 3rd of April, there is a promo code for a $20 ticket. Bravo 2020 is the code. That's in caps. There are 700 plus shows at this year's Comedy Festival, so any attention is good attention. I wish everybody in the festival the best of luck. We are the consumers as the comedians, which is a slightly fraught proposition. Mm. And, yeah, I wish everybody well for the festival.
Well, look, yeah, I agree with that. I wish everyone well and may everyone do the best show, because then the standard of the industry is raised, everyone keeps talking, that sort of thing. And by mentioning 700 shows, I mean, I don't know if it was that big, you know, in 2015 when you wanted to win the award, but I mean, that is a very, what is it, a BHAG, a big, hairy, audacious goal that you had. But, you know, I just think so long as everyone does their best, that's the first thing, and gives it their all, puts in the professionalism and skill, and you certainly have that, and lots of humour. So, bravo, so to speak, down at the venue MC Showroom in Paran. As you said, 25th of March through 3rd of April, 6:45. There's a public transport accessible time. Yeah.
And if you want to get amongst my comedy workshops, my next one is May 11th in Hawthorne, and that you can find details on justineslace.com. The workshop is $90 for 90 minutes, but contact me if that is prohibitive for you financially. You'll be match fit to do stand-up comedy after that.
Justine, well, thank you for the show. Thank you for coming in. But thank you for expanding your skills and showing a form of leadership that you're building other people, particularly places like Skitzy, where people face disadvantage, that sort of thing, and what you said about if it's prohibitive, that's really cool as well. That's, great community stuff, great building, great leadership. And in that sense, I can only wish you a big bravo for bravo.
Thanks, Sally. Always lovely to see you and chat. And Erin, good luck with your internship on the show.
Yes, the wicked boss here.
Yes.
All right.
Always a joy. Thank you.
Cool. Thank you so much, Justine. I'm going to just get some music rolling because Jesse Ryan is waiting to come in and talk about All Guts, No Glory. I love the comedy festival. There's so much queer and gender-related comedy going on. And sometimes, it does take a little bit of bravery to get up and do comedy. So here's one of my favourite bands, Midnight Oil, and from their live Screamin' Blue album, Brave Faces. 3CR, 855 AM, 3CR Digital. 3cr.org.au, 3CR On Demand, Out of the Pan with Sally.
Without a postcard. Flower people were so Judas Mom. Straight and out away. Good luck to be with spirit. The talk of politicians. Sentences of cynics are the sentences of truth. Face the boardroom, the old state wall.
Pan thanks Go Kindly for their sponsorship of this program. Go Kindly creates high-quality, locally made bedding, donating 50% of profits to support women and gender diverse people experiencing housing stress. Check out gokindly.com.au and take their pillow quiz.
LGBTIQA plus people, that's come from a large history of people standing up and acting up for our rights and our communities.
Talking Queer Pacifica, talking about us.
You know, this very like violent act of like hatred and bigotry towards trans people, where they demonise the image of trans people, especially trans women.
For working class queers, for queers of colour, for those who are poor and homeless, the struggle is continuing.
3CR, stay tuned, stay radical.
That is us, 3CR 855 AM, 3CR digital, 3cr.org.au, 3CR on demand, staying radical and being difficult. Hello, Mr. Prime Minister. We love being difficult and we're going to keep doing it, particularly when it comes to progressive voices and gender, and 3CR proudly being proactive about standing up for trans and gender diverse people. And a reminder that on March the 31st, once again, we have Trans Day of Audibility. Lots of trans programming. I've lined up a great guest for next Sunday to talk about some important trans issues. And, I'll tell you more about that later on. And I'm going to repeat that show on Trans Day of Audibility because I'm very excited about that. And I'm also excited about my next guest, who's live in the studio and is no stranger to this studio. We don't have regular guests. We have awesome guests and recurring guests. Jesse Ryan, you are certainly one of them. Welcome back to 3CR.
Thank you so much for having me. It's usually me getting home at this hour on a Sunday, so yay, go team, being adults.
I don't know how you do it. I'm thanking heavens for the coffee in my still relatively new neighbourhood of West Brunswick. Coffee in West Brunswick, who'd have thought of it? But seriously, it's not about me and coffee. It's about you and your latest show, which takes you back more to comedy, All Guts, No Glory, which is, of course, a contrast to your Midsummer show, which leads to two questions. First of all, it's only, where are we, about 8 weeks or so since I saw you at Midsummer and we chatted late last year.
That's correct.
How did that go, and how come this somewhat contrasting show in artistic genre style has come about?
Well, the Midsummer show went really well. I didn't bleed out getting tattooed live on stage, which is a great thing. No one died, which is also awesome.
that's good, yeah. It's too much cleaning up, a bit like Deathmatch Wrestling Ring Crew, but that's another story.
I'm not into Breaking Bad that badly, you know what I'm saying? So
yeah.
Midsummer went really well. It was a challenging process to get everything together, but we had lasers, we had a DJ, we had tattoos. That was like the three kind of match points that I wanted to tick off, so we did that. And then back into comedy, which is great. It's a lot more freedom to what I can do in comedy. Like, as a journalist, I have to sign X, Y, and Z on contracts. You know, when you get festivals funding you, you also have to sign X, Y, and Z on contracts. But this time I'm free of funding, free of any organizational support, and can absolutely go to town on a few people.
Yeah, well, All Guts, No Glory, which, of course, you attracted me to this because it is going to be set in a boxing ring, which is next door to my passion of
wrestling adjacent. Wrestling. Yep.
ropes, turnbuckles, that sort of thing. What you can either tease or answer directly. What's the relevance of the boxing ring in terms of the All Guts, No Glory, Jesse?
Yeah, just taking people out. Metaphorical non-violence, I guess. And also, I didn't want to just like go up there and do straight like stand up.
But you're queer, so you couldn't have done straight.
Well, am I? Jesus, work that one out for me. No, I was just.
Did I out you on worldwide radio?
Oh no. Oh wow, sorry, I think that's probably going to burst some eardrums. My laugh is like that, by the way, that's just my natural laugh. Yeah, I don't know, we kind of worked backwards. We did a photo shoot with boxing gloves in it, and then It was just meant to be part of the promo, and now it's the premise of the show, which is really interesting. Like, I'm very much not an aggressive person. I'm very much a pacifist, even though I have got chaos tattooed on my leg. Worked that one out. So this one's just really pushing me out of my comfort zone, and I didn't want to just, like, do straight stand-up. I wanted to make something really physical. It's borderline performance art, you know? So, yeah, just not as highbrow as my last show, which is a good thing.
Okay. Well, look, Do I be impolite and disagree with a guest? I loved your Midsummer show. I think the way it combined genres was amazing, and didn't just push the envelope, tore the envelope to shreds, which I think you do. And, you know, we need a whole range of art and performance in our festivals. And we need a whole range of comedy in the Melbourne International Comedy Festival. So let's get to the gist of the comedy in your show. What's the sort of – is there an overarching theme?
Yeah, so one of the biggest themes, and we're just discussing this off air, and it's funny that you should just say this about festivals and funding. We take aim at Creative Victoria.
Woo.
And Colin Brooks, the arts minister. Like, we have this guy who's literally just ripped the guts out of multiple organizations, you know, risking our title as a UNESCO World Literature City because of all these things going on. So, yeah, absolutely the arts funding. It's all about the systems. It's, like, also quite scary what's happening in South Australia overnight. So Pauline Hanson, I have to get rid of my hair colour as well because orange has got a bad association now. But it's all these kind of, like, machinations that we feel like as individuals we probably can't combat. But comedy isn't considered an art form anyway because, quote-unquote, it's too commercially successful. There's a whole bunch of things going down there. But, yeah, definitely the system, definitely people like Colin Brooks, definitely the funding situation, the media landscape as well. All these things are really, really in a really bad position right now.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that it's not a serious situation, but what comedy allows is a lot of those barriers to conversation to be broken down.
Yeah. Wow. This is just, you know, personally, I mean, I think comedy, you know, yes, you can sit there and I'll be, you know, really extreme here, a funny thing happened to me on the way here and something affected my mother-in-law or whatever, which is, you know, the traditional stand-up. But I think it needs to have some meat. And Roving Reporter has just come in, which we will come back to this question. Can we please discuss the results of One Nation last night in Australia? Will this continue in Victoria? But, yeah, I think we need comedy like yours that get hit, you know, sort of, well, pun intended, whether it pulls punches or pulls no punches, to really make some points.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sick of this kind of risk-averse nature that we all have to, like, toe the party line at the moment. Otherwise, we're going to get, you know, pulled from festivals or have our funding pulled. We know what we're talking about here, it was since 2014 with the Sydney Biennale being, ironically, sponsored by Transfield, which is not as progressive as it sounds, and the offshore detention, all the way through to more recent things. These were just, like, sporadic little things, and all of a sudden over the last 3 or 4 years, it's just like the arts and media have never had so much mainstream attention, right?
Definitely. And, I don't know. I'm going to go for this. I mean, linking to Roving Reporter's question, does One Nation come to your show?
I mean, Pauline Hanson and I went to the same high school, many years apart. I am from Queensland. I also dated a member of the Catter family for about 3 months until I woke up to reality. So, unfortunately, I am from Queensland. These people are part of my background story. Also, like Sir J.B. Yakko-Peterson, like, Queensland is a feckin' minefield of, like, cooked political leaders, right? So, coming from Queensland, you can't escape that kind of,
Yeah, we've had a message in from Jack, one of the also a recurring guest on this show. He's so excited about this, yay for talking about arts funding and authoritarianism.
Yep.
And Jack, it's public knowledge, Dr. Jack Brady has released a PhD on in sort of this ballpark. Mm. And I've forgotten the exact title for now. So this is really good. But now, Pauline Hanson, and just remember that 3CR does not have a defamation budget, so let's try to be direct yet not defamatory.
Yes, I'm very good at that. Look, Pauline Hanson, I think our issue was that we kind of treated her and the One Nation Party as kind of a joke or a footnote in history. Mm. And this kind of undercurrent of X, Y, and Z in Australia has always been there. It's just, I think it's also tied down to lockdowns. This radicalization came through. And we're just seeing it bubble up to the surface. I think genuinely is a threat to the political landscape and to social cohesion in this country. We can't not look at her. I mean, she doesn't really have policies, but she's...
Exactly.
Exactly, but she does spout enough hate. And then she just feels emboldened to do so.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, she does these attention-seeking cunning stunts. Mm. And...
I see what you did there.
And, you know, they get attention and they get people talking about her. I mean, I remember my way back, this is 44 years ago, my Year 12 politics teacher said, the media doesn't tell us what to think, but it helps us frame what we think about. And so they give Pauline Hanson attention and those views come into it and we don't get anything else. So yeah, media certainly comes into it along with Ms. Hanson or whoever else.
Yeah, and you know, like, I've worked in mainstream and fringe media and press for like 10 years. I can tell you the threats from certain factions are becoming more increasing. Our commissioning budgets are shrinking. And alongside that, we've had, you know, continual cuts to the education budgets in this country. So it's this perfect amalgamation and storm of different elements that are really quite scary. But it's all planned, you know what I mean?
Well, yeah. I mean, people say, oh, but there's this angle and this angle. And when you look at it together, and then in this day and age compared to 1982 of much greater world interconnectivity, one wonders where it's coordinating across international borders as well. It can't be coincidence. And so, yeah, let's at least talk about it now while we can.
Yeah, 100%. The world's burning pretty quickly right now, so we don't know how long we've got, do we?
We don't know. I suppose the question that comes to mind, Jesse, how do you get a laugh out of all of this stuff when we could be going, ah, or words to that effect?
Good question. We haven't tested this show in front of an audience yet, so let's see if it is funny. No, I mean, honestly, I mean, it is funny. Look at me. I'm like, I literally look like a leprechaun right now. leprechaun, not leopard, different. Yeah, I don't know how we get jokes out of it, but, like, I guess you pull people in, you find those universal threads, and then, you know, you just massage it out. There's a lot of like metaphoricness stuff in there, I guess. That wasn't the worst answer I've ever given, but anyway, there we are.
No, it's a good answer. I think that, you know, and look, the thing is, if comedy and performance generally can make people laugh / entertain people and make people just go away and think a bit, then it's doing a really, really good service, a good job and broadening, and we need it while it's still there.
Yeah, we do. Yep. Absolutely do.
Yeah, so really, really good. So, you know, had you had any idea for this show before you did the Midsummer one? Because, as I say, only Midsummer was only 8 weeks ago, so it's...
I honestly don't remember. Midsummer in January and February was so busy for me. Like, as you know, I did seven things back-to-back between February 8th and January 4th. And then we pretty much were in rehearsals 2 days after that for this show. And then we were locked in the writing room together, me and my awesome director, Fiona Scott-Norman.
Of course.
Yeah, and Fiona's a legend. But, yeah, no, we kind of pulled it together in 4 weeks. We finally got the show written last week. And off script, according to what happened yesterday in rehearsals, which is great because...
Yeah. Oh, well, look, you know, the fact that you've got, you know, a great producer in Fiona and Scott Norman, who's, oh, gosh, you know, veteran experience, like our previous guest, Justine Sless, and it's great that someone like Fiona then, you know, brings someone like yourself on, who's not totally inexperienced, of course, from...
Comedy is still relatively virgin, like, territory for me. This is only the second stand-up show I've ever done, so... Yeah, but I learn a lot. I'm really fortunate to work with like a large rotation of different directors, and each of them brings kind of like a different skill set or perspective to it. Shout out to Fiona for bringing me cooked sausages for lunch every day. Just one of those weird things that's not a metaphor, but yeah, her direction is only matched by her cooked sausages, truly.
Yeah. We need to eat. Apparently, it's sort of something that is very, very useful. So, yes, you've gone from being a functional bottom to all guts, no glory in the space of a few years, which is, you know, really awesome. But I think it's excellent. But I want to come back. I'm going to go directly, and you can go out of, you know, comedian mode. I want to discuss roving reporter's question here, because it is obviously relevant to us and in, you know, in what we're talking about. One Nation last night in South Australia. Now, I mean, I have only caught news up to the end of last night where Labor had, what was it, 31 or 2 seats out of 47, Liberals for an independent one. One Nation, no confirmed seats as yet, but of course there's going to be preference flows between whoever, which could really make things complex and counting for weeks. But regardless of the detail, you know, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think they mentioned something about spilling over into Victoria in that question, and I think that's entirely possible. And I think that a lot of people who live in the inner north of Melbourne tend to think that we live in this kind of echo chamber, and that we're representative of the rest of the country. And this is not a thing about division. I think the first thing that we need to understand is why, you know.
Yep.
Why before us against them? But yeah, I think it's entirely possible. I mean, the Liberals have just been absolutely decimated, which is fantastic, but I can't even believe I'm saying this, which is a less of the two evils now. You know, it's crazy.
Yeah. Well, the challenge we're going to face in Victoria is, you know, is that there are concerns about the Allan government. Now, I'm not saying I agree with these, but, you know, something that maybe that Labor's gone stale, the CMFEU concerns, for, yeah, whether for better 100%. Or worse. Whereas Labor in South Australia seemed relatively popular and reason, we'll say, that sort of thing.
Have you seen the Premier with his shirt off? Oh, my God.
Should I? Or should we give a content note or something?
Yeah, there's just, like, there's a lot of things going on there.
Okay, that's Peter Malinit, South Australian Premier. And I'm sorry about the name there.
Yeah, he's a daddy.
Like, okay.
Yeah, that might have had something to do with it. That's all I'm saying. But, yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, Jacinta's, you know, on the nose here, which I think, you know, to some extent, as much as we do tend to see Victoria as perhaps one of the more progressive of the eight states and territories, we've got this issue where Labor's on the nose. So I think we have to consider this.
But, like, and we've got, like, you know, NSN is, like, most active in our state as well. So are we really that progressive?
Yeah, there is that other side to it. So, yeah, it's a challenging time, and I suppose, well, us talking about it and you doing comedy, trying to call out the things about One Nation, you know, it's even if one voice hears that and goes, oh, maybe I should see what One Nation really, really stands for above all the noise, I think that's a start. So, yeah, look, if I was to answer Roving's question directly, I'd have to say there is at least some probability that there'll be some degree of flow on. But whether this all translates into seats, given where One Nation votes are and all that sort of thing, you know, regions, outer suburbs, and might work, but also the fact that the sort of demographics are scattered over all seats, it makes for an interesting thing. So it's partially our electoral system, but then we've got proportional representation in the upper house where they might get somewhere, which would be a frightening concept.
Terrifying.
Yeah.
I mean, people seem to forget that she was literally sent to jail in the 90s for, like, you know, she's a literal criminal. I mean, honestly, it's just ridiculous.
Yep, and Roving has come in with an analysis from Cos Samaras, electoral analyst, and the educated classes are not automatically drifting conservative just because they're middle class. In a seat like Davenport in South Australia, willing to back Labor while the angrier anti-system vote is parking elsewhere. The result is a Liberal Party being hollowed out from both ends, losing educated suburban voters to Labor and its harder edge to One Nation. Yeah, so there is that sort of polarisation factor. And, you know, look, that is obviously the Liberal, well, the fact that the Liberal Party is stuck in the middle of nowhere. And they've got their own internal troubles, but, you know, One Nation has been allowed to rise. And Roving has also said, in relation to Peter Malinauskas, yes, he's hot.
I feel validated. Thank you very much.
We all need to feel affirmed.
Jesus Christ. Oh, my God. Like, just South Australian premiere, pool shots. That's all you need to search on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So let's get the details coming back on topic for you, Jesse. All guts, no glory. When, where, who, how, as they say.
Yeah, so we are opening on a Wednesday coming up on the – is that the 23rd? I think it's the 23rd.
Wednesday the 25th.
Oh, 20. Thank you. Yeah, Wednesday the 25th through to Saturday at 6 p.m. And then we've got two dirty late night shows at 10:30 p.m. on Friday and Saturday. Just head to the Melbourne International Comedy Festival website and search All Guts, No Glory. And you can use the code word GUTS for a little cheeky discount at checkout.
All right, then. So we get people into one of these, 700 amazing shows that is the Comedy Festival. God.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
I don't know. I mean, the thing is, I'm thinking, wow, 700 shows.
It's a conversation for another time, but like alongside arts funding, like the festival model is completely broken as well. So the fact that we think that there's sustainable enough audiences to get... Yeah, anyway.
Yeah, 700. I mean, I'm just thinking as well, if you're one of the judges, how on earth do you get to see 700 shows on average an hour in about 3 or 4 weeks? I can't even imagine that. My brain is imploding. All right. Before I completely implode then, listeners of all genders, better just wrap things up because it is around 5:30 to 1 and I have to make way for Freedom of Species, who have an excellent show today, as they always do. They're in to talk with two fabulous guests whose names are Claire and Jesse from Ravencore Against Vegans Against Fascism. Relevantly enough, who are based in there, but the guests are based in Tucson, Arizona, so it is pre-recorded because we're not going to keep people up late at night. So that's awesome stuff from Freedom of Species. Who knows who will be rotating in for rotations at 2 o'clock, but keep the yourself locked on 3CR or make sure you have listened to Queering the Air with Madison at 3 o'clock. Madison has a guest who is a queer person who escaped Russia and is now a refugee in Kazakhstan and, well, is facing that sort of being torn in two because Kazakhstan does not like Russians, apparently, do not like Russians, but is also facing the queerness issue. So that's going to be some amazing radio, as Madison does, and Salaam Radio Show at 4, so 3CR progressive grassroots listing, which is not... attached to any funding strings either, because that's what we do. Whew. Thank you, Jesse, for coming in as always. It's always awesome to have you on to hear about your creativity and your views. Took us to you for a great season.
Yeah, thank you, and I'll see you at the show next week, Sally.
Cool. Yeah, we'll see you there. Awesome. And I will take it out today with the track that I found that had glory in it. Here's Bruce Springsteen from Born in the USA and Glory Days. Thanks for tuning in to Out of the Pan. Thanks once again to Justine Sless for coming in as well. Thanks, Aaron, for your assistance on the show today. I think this is going to be a good tag team. Thanks for tuning in to Out of the Pan. I'm Sally Golden. I'll catch you next week.
Boys.
Back in high. You've been listening to a 3CR podcast. If you found it valuable, please consider donating or subscribing to support independent community radio. To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au. You've been listening to a 3CR podcast. If you found it valuable, please consider donating or subscribing to support independent community radio. To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au.